It is 1:30. This is KYR 89.1. I'm Daniel Brain. We are breaking into our regular programming this hour to bring you live coverage of Governor Asa Hutchinson's latest daily briefing on the coronavirus outbreak here in Arkansas. We hear today that there are 41 deaths and 1,853 cases. And here is Governor Hutchinson live.
My new face mask today. This is from Danville Public Schools, the Danville Little John. So that's a mask that was sent to me. They've made there at the school a lot of masks for people in our community and their schools. So very proud of them, proud to wear that mask today. And thank you for joining us for the daily COVID-19 update. I'm joined as usual by Dr. Smith, our Secretary of the Department of Health. Today we have two special guests, Director Amisha Martin from Department of Human Services and Child and Family Welfare, and then a special guest today, which is the First Lady of Arkansas, Susan, and they will address the issue of child abuse awareness as we go through this today. First, let me comment on the cases that we have. We had yesterday 1,781 cases. And we've had a plus 142 cases here in Arkansas. That comes to a total today of 1,923 cases. I'll note that of the 142 new cases, 117 of those cases were in the prison system, which is Cummins, as we've mentioned before. Hospitalizations, there's five additional hospitalizations, bringing us to 93, and two additional deaths, bringing us to 42 deaths here in Arkansas. If we go to the graph, this is the number of new cases in Arkansas, and as we've distinguished before, we have all of the cases there, and this is through yesterday, April 19th. And you see the last graph, of course, what's in, I'm colorblind, but I think that's orangish and the white. And so the top part of it, what's in white, reflects what is in the congregate environment, which is the prison system. And you see we did that going back for a number of days. What's in the dark orange is what is in the rest of Arkansas. And so you can see that information there. And if you go to the next, this is a different graph that you haven't seen before. And I saw this in the New York Times, actually, that this is the 7-day rolling average. And this is how they compute the curve whenever you have such extreme ups and downs in terms of the bar graph. And so the 7-day rolling average gives you a smoother trend line as you can see where you're going. And you can see under that trend line where we are. It smooths it out a little bit, shows you're a little bit, you're certainly on the plateau or a little bit on the downward trend under the red line. And then if you go to the next one, you can see the same information, the 7-day rolling average of new COVID-19 cases, but these exclude the correctional facilities. And so you obviously see a more extreme drop in the community spread and the community cases on the orange line under this scenario. So we're being transparent. We're putting all the information out there. And I've asked Dr. Smith for tomorrow because there's still more cases that are positive in the Cummins prison system that are still not even in this data, but we hope to have them all brought up date tomorrow. And so I would expect that a high number today will probably be a high number tomorrow as well, because we're still getting the results from the almost 1,000 that we tested in the prison system. And then if we go to the next chart, next graph, there we go, right here. This is on the hot topic of testing in Arkansas and where we are in terms of testing. I received this from the White House that was sent to me, and this is a national evaluation of tests per month per 1,000 people by state. And so this is really a per capita reflection of how we're doing in testing in Arkansas. And then if you go over to the standard on the right side, it says that in the black is over 90 per 1,000. So that's the highest level of testing. And then if you go to the next one, it's 60 to 90 per 1,000. And that is the next category, and it goes on down from there. You can see that Arkansas is doing very well in terms of per capita testing as compared to the rest of the nation. And I think that is good news to give a perspective on the testing that we've significantly increased in Arkansas. And I really am colorblind because I thought the Arkansas on this one is the darkest of those, but I think that reflects probably accurately here. But you can still see that we are in a good position in terms of our testing per capita. And that leads me to a point that I want to make in terms of our testing here in the state, that our goal is not just to do contact tracing testing, and that is to find a positive and then you run down who we need to most desperately test that's been in their circle of influence. And we want to be able to expand that testing that we do in Arkansas to more broad surveillance testing, where we have a better sampling across the state as to who has had COVID-19 or more broadly, they might have had it with not being symptomatic. And so we want to have that kind of information, particularly when you look into the fall and long term. We want to have that testing capability. So I will be meeting along with Dr. Smith, of course, with our state labs and hospitals who are currently doing testing. We're going to have a working group with them tomorrow to look at the question of how we can move into surveillance testing, what other kinds of testing resources do we have out there, and even now, how we can better access some of the commercial labs and the instruments that we need, the kits that we need to carry out the testing here in Arkansas. Where we are right now in the state is that we're fighting this virus every day. And while we're hoping to lift some of the restrictions on May 4th, that's our goal, is lift some of the restrictions on May 4th. Everybody should not assume that because we're lifting some restrictions on May 4th, that all of a sudden we don't wear masks anymore, we don't have to social distance, or we don't have to restrict our gatherings. That is not true. Those social distancing requirements need to be in place even as we go through May 4th, as we lift some restrictions, and as we go into further phases. We will keep those social restrictions in place. We just want to be able to go back to more employment and more business activity consistent with those social distancing requirements. And so that is our future. We want our cases to decline in our communities, and we've got to continue to reduce the spread to accomplish that. Yesterday, I had a question on when are grandchildren going to get to see grandparents, and when are grandparents going to get to see grandchildren again? And that was a social media question that got a lot of response because a lot of grandparents asked the same question. And I'm a grandparent, as the First Lady and I are both. And we have six grandchildren, and our visitations with them have been restricted. They've been socially distant, and we follow all those guidelines. And it's just the reality of where we are, particularly protecting those grandparents that might be particularly vulnerable. And I asked Dr. Smith to address that a little bit more. So Dr. Smith, if you could come and talk about more in detail the cases and address that important issue for so many.
This is Nate Smith, Director of the Arkansas Department of Health. Secretary.
Thank you, Governor. Be happy to provide some more information on the counts and then also address specifically that question. As the Governor mentioned, we do have 142 new cases reported. That of those, 117 of them are from the Cummins unit. not all of the data from the Cummins unit are in our system yet. We had quite a bit of testing over the weekend, and overnight we've had about 250 added to that. So we're up to approximately 600 total at the Cummins unit. Although I'm glad to say we've finished most of the testing that we'll be doing there. So our total case counts as of today is 1,923. Of course, we'll be adding some of these, we'll be adding these tests from the Cummins unit that are not yet added to that count. Our total active cases are 1,133. Of those, of our cases, total cases, we have 244 among healthcare workers, that's up 7. We have 128 related to nursing homes, and that remains the same. We have 93 currently hospitalized. That is, we had 7 newly hospitalized and 2 released, so we're up a total net gain of 5 from yesterday. We have 24 who are on a ventilator, that's down 1 from yesterday. Unfortunately, we've had 2 additional new deaths, and so that brings our total up to 42. We have 749 who have recovered. That's 28 more than yesterday. I want to talk a little bit about surveillance, picking up on what the governor said, but I'll first specifically address the issue with grandparents and grandchildren. That physical contact between vulnerable adults, particularly those over age of 65, those with underlying medical conditions, and children is something that in the Opening Up America Again plan is a phase 3 or a phase 3 plus activity. And the reason for that is that children are at particularly high risk of spreading COVID-19, especially younger children. One, because they don't do well with consistently practicing physical distancing and hand washing, but also because they are more likely to be asymptomatic. So they don't feel sick, and so you don't know they're infected. So bringing together those who are at highest risk of spreading COVID-19 together with those who are at highest risk of complications from COVID-19 is not a good idea. On the other hand, there are many ways that grandparents can connect with their grandchildren, not only maintain but build those relationships with the use of technology. As an example, my in-laws who live next door to us use FaceTime to connect with my nieces who live in Maryland. And I would say that they're at least as involved in the lives of my nieces as they are in the lives of my children who live right next door to them. So there are ways that we can use technology to reduce that risk of spread of COVID-19 until we get to that point where it really is safe to do that. The last thing I wanted to talk about a little bit was surveillance. I think we are doing a good job with testing. Of the 890 tests reports that we received yesterday, only 1% of them were positive. So I think that we're looking and we're finding cases, but the number of cases are actually are dropping. Of those 142 that we had, only 22 of them were from the community, which is one of the lowest daily increments that we've had. I think that in order to get the best idea, though, we really need clinicians out there to be testing those who have COVID-19-like syndromes or symptoms. A few days ago, I said we were expanding our testing criteria. Now I really want to encourage those who are caring for patients. If you have someone who has symptoms that are consistent with COVID-19, please go ahead and do a test. We have capacity for that amongst the commercial labs, and those results are coming back much more quickly than they were even a week or two ago. So that is our best way of getting the best handle on how we're doing throughout the state if we have providers throughout the state testing those who have symptoms. And we will continue to expand our contact tracing program. We are training another 100 to 120 individuals this week to do that, so we will continue to expand that capacity as well. With that, I'll turn it back over to the governor.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. And children are a great concern during this time as well, and there hasn't been a more effective advocate for our children in our state than the First Lady. So Susan, if you would come, and I know you want to say something about this being Child Abuse Awareness.
And this is Susan Hutchinson, First Lady of Arkansas.
Put the number up.
Well, life goes on with or without coronavirus, and one of those things is April. April's here, it's been springing, it's lovely. The plants have been blooming and the pollen's out there, and we're strolling and trying to take our stresses out, getting outside somewhat, safe distancing. But this is also, and has been since 1983, Child Abuse Awareness and Prevention Month, the month of April. And we're not on the circuit. I'm not out doing the fundraising for the different centers across the state. We're not doing big fundraisers. We're not having rallies, but we still want to bring attention to it, at least this 1 month out of the year, because sadly it goes on, with or without a virus. Maltreatment of our children, our precious children and teens, does go on. The issue with the virus is that not that many people are interacting with the children, or maybe the people interacting with the children now in these more close quarters are not familiar as our mandated reporters are. They're not as familiar as the warning signs and the symptoms, or maybe they haven't spent time with their kids talking to them and realizing what might be going on in their life. Maybe they're not recognizing that these different behaviors are really warning signs that something really unacceptable is going on in their life. And we do have a statewide 24-hour, 7-day-a-week hotline for suspected child abuse, maltreatment. It's a hotline where responsible adults can call in. We made it easy for you because it was hard for me to remember the numbers. So it's 1-844-SAVE-A-CHILD. And that phone line is answered 24/7 by professionals who take down your information or what your suspicions are, or if you know particular details. Of course, if it's very urgent, you would need to call local officials to get help for that situation. We do want to be looking out for the children. The things that happen in your childhood last a lifetime, the good, the bad, and the very ugly. And we're trying to eliminate as much of that ugliness as possible, as that does carry on with the rest of their lives and can have some very serious outcomes that the rest of us would be needing to help them out with. So if you would keep this hotline down, 1-844-SAVE-A-CHILD, and it is a free, toll-free number.
Thank you, Susan. And Director Misha Martin is such a leader for our Children and Family Services. Please.
This is Misha Martin, Director of the Division of Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services.
Thank you, Governor Hutchinson, for your continued leadership during this difficult time. And thank you to you and First Lady Hutchinson for always making Arkansas children a priority. I'd like to also thank Secretary Smith and his colleagues at the Health Department. They have provided guidance and support to our staff and foster parents, and it has been invaluable, so thank you. As you all know, that child abuse and neglect does not stop during a pandemic. Our DCFS Children and Family Services frontline staff continue to keep children safe and to help families under difficult circumstances. I'd like to take an opportunity to thank our staff across the state who continue to do amazing work, not only to investigate abuse and neglect, but serve our children in foster care, as well as serve families in home. Our staff, along with our partners at the Children's Advocacy Center, the Crimes Against Children Division at Arkansas State Police, continue to have face-to-face contact when necessary to ensure and assess safety of our children across the state. Since the governor declared the public health emergency here in Arkansas on March 11, our workers at DCFS have provided services to over 3,500 families. Some of those cases include our differential response prevention programs, where we assess families' needs, we can help them and link them up with community supports if there's food insecurities or other neglectful situations. We at DCFS continue to serve and support over 4,400 children in foster care. As you know, we are not in these efforts alone. Our foster parents, relative caregivers, and other community partners have gone above and beyond to care and support for the children and families that we serve. In addition, we greatly appreciate the legal community and specifically the judges who are working through lots of logistical issues and are holding video conferencing, court hearings to ensure that children are safe and moving towards permanency. And I really can't thank our partners enough for their continued commitment to our mission that every child deserves a safe, stable family every day. These are difficult times for our state, and it's sometimes a difficult time for our children. We know that children in isolation are at greater risk for abuse or neglect, and as the First Lady mentioned, of course there is the hotline, but we also wanted to make available other supports to families that are in need. So on the screen here are there two additional hotlines for the Mental Health and Addiction Services Support Line, as well as the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. And I would urge that families or parents, if they are in need of additional helps, that they reach out to these hotlines, or they can reach out to the Division of Children and Family Services. We also know, as the First Lady said, that our children are not coming into contact with as many professionals who normally report abuse and neglect. So we need your help in the community. If you suspect abuse or neglect, please call the hotline. You do not have to know that the abuse or neglect is happening, but if you suspect it, I encourage you to call the hotline. I understand that it may be a difficult decision to get involved, but we need your help, and more importantly, the children need your help. Since the pandemic started, we've received 3,148 calls to the hotline. That's an almost 50% increase in calls since the same time period last year. So we need you to report the neglect or abuse if you suspect it. I'd just like to end by again thanking the governor, the First Lady, and all the staff and community partners across the state who continue to serve and support the families.
Thank you for that important message, First Lady and Misha Martin. With that, I'll take any questions. Yes?
With prisoners now accounting for about a third of the state's total, by my calculations, do you believe that's likely to place additional strain on hospitals? And is there a plan on where to transport those prisoners if they start getting really sick?
I'll let Dr. Smith comment on that. We're well prepared in terms of hospitals and care for those prisoners. They're largely asymptomatic at the present time. But Dr. Smith?
Nate Smith, Secretary of the Arkansas Department of Health again.
The governor is correct. Most of those who have been tested are asymptomatic. Some of those, of course, will go on to develop symptoms. They tend to be a younger population than many of those who are hospitalized. We typically do not test asymptomatic individuals outside of a confined congregate setting. In this case, we needed to test them to be able to know how to appropriately segregate them. But not all of those who are testing positive are going to go on to develop symptoms or develop severe symptoms. So we'll see how many end up requiring hospitalization, but it probably will be a much lower percentage than from our numbers in the community, where typically we're only testing those who are symptomatic.
So the number of inmates at Cummins is what? The inmate population.
Well, in Cummins max, and these are, we've tested right at 1,000. I think in those barracks, there's probably about 1,200. Do you have any other information than that?
That's correct. There are some outlying barracks that have not appeared to be involved that have not been tested this time.
And so the number of positives, did you say the number of positives was 600?
Approximately 600, yes.
questions?
I guess of the prison population, how many of them are hospitalized?
Good. Stay up there a minute.
Yeah, the latest information I have is 3.
And I guess to Dr. Smith, there was a Times article that came out that said using ventilators could actually be worsening symptoms of COVID-19. Have we seen any of that here in Arkansas, or do you have anything anecdotal to that?
I'm trying to think of exactly what you're talking about. We know that those who are caring for our patients in the hospital generally try and keep from putting people on ventilators if they can. Unfortunately, especially if it's someone who is has many underlying medical conditions, when they go on a ventilator, they may end up being on a ventilator for some time and oftentimes don't make it off. But it is true that a ventilator actually forces air into the lungs, and in conditions that cause the lung to be stiffer, it can cause some damage to the lungs. But that's not unique to COVID-19.
Governor, you've mentioned how May 4th is not an all clear for people. Can you give people an idea of what life will be like on May 4th?
Well, we hope on May the 4th to be able to lift some restrictions. I know that Dr. Smith and his team are first looking at the issue of elective surgery or elective procedures. And so we hope that people will be able to make appointments again for things that they have put off. We also want to look to see what other restrictions can be lifted in terms of allowing people to work and make a living. But all of the social restrictions and distancing guidelines that we put into place will still be there. So we hope we'll still be wearing masks. We'll still be socially distancing. We'll still be limiting our gatherings and the size of those. I think we'll have to be looking at our outdoor activity and whether any of the recreational activities over the summer can be adjusted. But those will be decisions we will make between now and May the 4th, depending upon the progress that we make and where we see ourselves.
And if we see a spike, say after we move into phase 1, is it possible, will you be able to take a step back?
Certainly. I mean, that is exactly the plan under the White House's guidance, and it makes some sense. We can adjust it as need be, but obviously, if we lift some restrictions and we see that we're increasing the number of cases or the other statistics is not going the right direction, well, we can tighten it back down again. We have to do that, but we hope that we'll be able to stick with the path, the trajectory of loosening some of the restrictions and getting life back to normal, but it's going to be a long process to get there. Yes.
Are any of us 110?
All right, remotely, what's the question?
Okay, sorry, it's Stan Horns from NEA Report. Are any of the 600 total tests that come in included in the 1923 number, or are those all not included?
No, they are included.
Some of those are included. We're trying to get them into our system as quickly as possible. About 250 of those came in overnight and were mostly done in a commercial lab. So we're working hard to get those into our database, but there is some lag, some delay. Eventually they will all be included in our database, but when we show the graph, we'll go ahead and put those in a different color so that we can see what is happening in our community as well as what's happening within the Cummins unit.
Was there a conference call with the Vice President Pence that you were on today?
The question was I on a call with Vice President Pence today? Yes, I was on a call with him with a number of other governors, and one of the big topics was testing.
What were his recommendations in regard to what states should be doing to get additional tests, and what was the response from you and the other governors?
Was really a briefing on what they're doing, what resources are available to us. We had an opportunity to talk about some of the challenges that we face with the commercial labs, with some of the challenge we faced in our public health lab at getting the reagents But those are things we're working on every day. As you can see, it's while we want to be able to do more, and that's the reason that we're going to be meeting tomorrow with our hospital labs, is that we want to be able to address those challenges. But it was a long conversation today, about an hour and a half, with the Vice President, talking in great detail with him and his public health team on testing. Remotely, let's go remotely if there's another question.
Governor Rolly Hoyt, THV 11.
Okay.
I had a question for you and Dr. Smith. Understanding that you expected to see this happen in the prison, that could be foreseen, now that it's actually happened, Dr. Smith, what have you been able to study or learn about the way it spread in the prison? And for both you and the governor, has that given you any pause at all for how what you've learned might apply to opening up the state a little bit more?
I'll let Dr. Smith go first.
And again, Health Secretary Dr. Nate Smith.
Thank you. It's a good question. The question is, what have we learned so far from working on the COVID-19 outbreak within our correctional system, specifically at the Cummins unit? And three major lessons that I've learned from that. One is that we've learned how rapidly COVID-19 can spread within a communal living setting. The first barracks that we had at the time that the first case was identified, already 43 of 46 in that first barracks were found to be infected. The second thing is that we found that a lot of people can be infected and asymptomatic. We knew that from our nursing home outbreaks, but we didn't know that the same would be true for a younger, generally healthier population. But asymptomatic infections appear to be constitute a lot of those positives that we're identifying. And the third is that once you know who is positive, who's negative, who's exposed, who's not exposed, the prison system is actually, it's the toughest place to control an outbreak, but also the easiest. Once you know who's positive, who's negative, who's exposed, who's not exposed, because you can actually direct the movements and limit the movements of individuals in that setting fairly easily. You don't have to worry about people wandering around where they're not supposed to be.
I would add to that in terms of your question as to how this impacts our decisions leading to May 4th, it is one factor among many factors that will lead to our decisions and guide our decisions on whether any of the current restrictions can be lifted. Obviously, the prison system is a city unto itself. It is a environment unto itself. What happens there is very, very important to us, but Dr. Smith and his team is working that. What guides us is, what do we need to do in preparation in the event it's in another of our prison facilities. So it's something we watch very carefully. It's one factor among many as we make our decisions for the future. And I heard a lady remotely try to ask a question, so I want to recognize her before we come back to the table.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Governor Hutchinson. My name is Shakari Briggs. I'm with the Pipeline Commercial and White House Journal. My question is for Dr. Smith. I wanted to see if you could tell me, out of the 42 patients that have passed away, how many were actually on ventilators?
All right. Just for the audience, the question is, of the 42 patients that have passed away, how many were actually on ventilators?
Health Secretary Dr. Nate Smith again.
I don't have an exact breakdown of that. I would say the majority were on ventilators. There were some who, because of their age and underlying conditions, opted for comfort care only. But the majority of those 42 at one time or another were put on a ventilator.
And coming back to the table here. Yes, ma'am.
Do you know the average number of tests being conducted each day, and do you have like an ideal number in mind of the number of tests you'd like to see before we begin to phase out?
Dr. Smith, do you know the average test that we've been doing?
The average test that we've been doing has been about 1,000 per day. And I'm reluctant to say there's a certain number. What I'm looking more is our percent positivity. As I mentioned, of those tests that were done, the 890 results that we received yesterday, and then of course that doesn't include many of the ones from Cummins' unit, only 1% of them were positive. Obviously, if people aren't getting sick, aren't developing symptoms, I don't expect providers to be doing tests on them, but as long as our percent positive remains low and continues to decrease, then I think we're going in the right direction.
So back to the prison, do you believe it's contained? I mean, do you have enough information from the prison and from your testing data to think that it is contained or that it's possible to contain there?
Well, with regard to the Cummins unit, it's not over till it's over. And until we have a completely interrupted chains of transmission, I'm not going to say that it's over. But once we know who's positive, who's negative, who's exposed, who's not exposed, then we can begin moving people around. And that, I would say, is the beginning of containment. And part of the reason why we've been so aggressive in testing in this setting is because that's critical information for us to do the things that we need to do to bring this under control, to contain it. And as I just stated, in the prison, it's the hardest place to control an outbreak, but the easiest once you have that information. I know that in some other states, they've taken a less aggressive approach to testing, and it just becomes very, very difficult to contain or even to know whether you've contained an outbreak if you don't know who's positive, who's negative, who's exposed, who's not exposed.
250 tests out? Not that you don't know the results on?
Currently, we've tested everyone that we think needs to be tested. We will probably be offering tests to some of the workers as well, but the barracks that haven't been tested at this point are ones where we have not had any interaction with the other barracks and no symptomatic individuals.
One more question from the table, and then we'll go remotely.
Governor, there's some federal legislation that would dole out $75 billion to hospitals, $10 billion for testing. Now, was that brought up on that call with Vice President Pence?
Yes, that was discussed broadly as to the potential good news if that legislation is passed and signed by the President, which they worked very hard on. That would be great news for our hospitals. We provided $10 million, as you know, to our rural hospitals. This week actually is going out, and that is hopefully can be supplemented in the near future with some of the federal support that will be coming in.
Do you have a ballpark idea on how much of that Arkansas will receive?
I do not.
I guess what would that go towards when it comes to the hospitals? Just general operating, or is there something earmarked?
My understanding is everyone knows that the hospitals, because they haven't been able to engage in revenue producing activities, that it really just goes to help them to survive. And that's the goal, that be to be consistent with their ongoing budget, but it's also to help expand in the areas of telehealth, which has been proven very successful and necessary, particularly in our rural areas.
In terms of testing, like what can be done further with funding?
Well, whenever we look at testing, we are dependent upon the commercial production. Even as we get an Abbott quick turnaround lab, we still have to have the kits that go with that. So they're scaling up nationally that kind of production. The second part of it is with our public health labs and whether, you know, we can internally here in Arkansas develop the type of testing that we need long term for surveillance activities to know whether somebody has had the virus before. And so that's one of the reasons I want to bring our experts together here in the state to see how we can utilize those kind of federal resources and to be able to expand into surveillance testing in Arkansas. That's what we're going to need this fall and beyond. Is there a final question remotely? All right, I hear Andrew DeMillo, I think.
Hey, Governor. I had a couple questions for you. Going back to the
May 4th target date you talked about. I guess when do you plan on actually detailing what the restrictions are exactly that you're going to lift or ease? When do you want to get more details on that? And if Arkansas does hit that target, are you going to require cities to lift or ease their restrictions as well?
Well, as you know, we have all tried to move in the same direction as a state. You know, I'll continue discussions with mayors as needed, but that is the objective, is that we move in the same direction as a state. In terms of the time frames, please note that we have our Economic Recovery Task Force that's working, being led by Stuart Walton, that will meet for the first time tomorrow. Some of their interaction with industry will be helpful to us. And then, of course, Dr. Smith and his team working with the different industry groups as well, and knowing what kind of protections can be put into place, what restrictions can we lift now. It's going to be very measured. Some of this we'll know before May 4th, but others will wait to closer in. So we're still early in that process, and we will, as we are able, we will make announcements. And I think there was one final question, maybe remotely, if I heard it right.
Yes, Governor. Hi. My name is Nahum Dominguez from the Opinion newspaper, New York. And I have two questions, one for you and one for Dr. Nate Smith. The first one is, there is a group in the community that will be suffering more than others, because they cannot apply for economically relief or assistance. Some of them have lost their jobs because they stay home following the state and health department guidelines. Or sometimes they lost their jobs because their workplaces just closed. Most of these people are not able to buy food, pay bills, or pay tax properly, because they don't have enough money to do so, or coming from the COVID-19 crisis.
All right, I think I can address that. Let me pick it up from there. That first of all, we recognize that there's a number of groups and individuals that are without a job because of the restrictions that have been put into place because of the downturn in the economy. And it's important for them to go to their bank or go to any nonprofit organization that they're familiar with and ask for assistance to guide them through this process. For example, if you're a hairdresser or a barber that's self-employed, you don't qualify for unemployment insurance, but you will soon qualify for pandemic unemployment assistance. And that's money that still will be available for these individuals that are struggling financially that might fit into that category. And then, of course, there's the food assistance, and other nonprofit organizations can help fill in that gap as well. But I really encourage you to reach out to some of our nonprofit organizations that will help guide these citizens. And was there a final question, part of it, for Dr. Smith, real quick?
Yes, the final question is that, is Dr. Smith, do you have the breakdown of the numbers of the deaths that can include the white, black, or Hispanic inside this death?
Yes, in terms of the deaths, we have 15 African American and 26 white, and I don't have any listed as Hispanic or other. Among our total cases, though, we have 4% Hispanic, 58% white, and 31% African American. And we have a smaller percentage, 0.4% Pacific Islander. I mentioned yesterday, though, that some of our Pacific Islanders, especially the Marshallese, may have put Marshallese in, and they would appear as other.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. And with that, thank you all very much today, both those that are listening remotely and always the group that looks so distinguished right here in this room. Thank you all.
And that was Governor Asa Hutchinson speaking in his latest daily briefing on the coronavirus outbreak here in Arkansas. You are listening to 89.1 KUAR Little Rock, a listener-supported service of UA Little Rock in partnership with UAMS. Just a brief recap of what we heard in Governor Hutchinson's briefing today. We heard an additional 142 positive test results for the coronavirus received since yesterday. That brings the total number of cases to 1,923 in the state. We also heard an additional two more people have died from COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. That brings the total number of deaths in the state from that disease to 42 today. Again, of that 1,923 figure, that represents the total number of people who have ever tested positive for the coronavirus here in Arkansas. Health Secretary Dr. Nate Smith saying about 1,133 cases are considered active. That is minus people who have recovered or have unfortunately died from COVID-19. We heard of the additional 142 cases added over since yesterday today. 117 of those were from the Cummins unit. That is a state prison in southeast Arkansas, a little pretty close to Pine Bluff. But that is not actually accurate, an accurate representation of the total number of cases at Cummins. Health officials saying that some of those are being excluded. Dr. Nate Smith saying that the state received about 250 positive test results from Cummins overnight. Dr. Smith saying that there are approximately 600 positive cases at the Cummins unit at that state prison, saying that that is still confined to just one barracks at that prison. It's a maximum security prison, saying about 1,200 people are housed in that that section of the prison. He says they are pretty much done at the health department testing inmates from that specific barracks. But they will be moving on to other barracks if they see fit and begin testing asymptomatic people. Again, you've been listening to 89.1 KUAR Little Rock, a listener-supported service of UA Little Rock in partnership with UAMS. Again, 1,923 cases of the coronavirus.